is Tennessee Talks with United States Congressman Tim Burchett.
Hey, everybody, I'm Congressman Tim Burchett, and welcome back to another episode of Tennessee Talks. Today, I'm joined by my buddy Joe Baker. Joe, thank you for being on with us.
Yes, sir. Glad to be with you, for sure.
All right. In 2009, when Tennessee legalized moonshine, Joe took the opportunity to transform his family's cherished moonshine recipe into the top moonshine business in the country, Old Smoky Moonshine. Actually, I remember when that came through the legislature. Joe and his wife, Jessie, also founded Mountain Ways, a 501c3 nonprofit that was dedicated to bringing the hospitality and values of the Appalachian region to those facing natural disasters and tragedies like the Gatlinburg wildfires we all remember that were just devastating, and most recently Hurricane Helene. Before we get into work you've done for the people of Appalachia, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about Old Smoky, if that'd be okay.
Yeah, of course.
What was it like growing up in a family with moonshine in its history?
You know, it's funny, Congressman. My
please
dad,
call me Tim, Congressman. Right. Some 85-year-old guy that ain't let the gun go off.
All right,
statistically. Well,
I hear you. You know, it's funny. Somebody asked me recently about how I got into it, and I really didn't have much choice. But when I was a kid, I remember my dad taking me to a still in Sevier County where he was making alcohol, and Dad was, I never knew him to drink ever. And, he was quick to tell me that he had an experimental license to make alcohol, and this alcohol that he was making, he said he sold it to McCormick Foods. And I remember him taking a little bottle of vanilla extract one time and showing me on the back of it, the ingredients. And of course, alcohol was listed. And right. As a kid, you believe what your parents say. So it's, you know, I think that, it was probably 20 years later, I'm talking to somebody at the TTB about a federal permit for Old Smoky. And I happened to ask, I said, do y'all have anything called an experimental license? And I found out quickly that my dad had been pulling the wool over my eyes for a while. So that, you know, it's who we are. It's our culture. It's our heritage. And thank God we're from East Tennessee. And I was lucky enough to be born in a family there in Sevier County where we could make a little money off of selling something.
Like during the Depression, it probably kept families from going hungry, actually. So
for sure. A lot of good folks made those products to get by, for sure.
Well, an Old Smoky success, of course, it's tied closely to popularity of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, which I love. Been in my backyard forever. I remember Daddy'd say we'd come home on a Friday and he'd say, we're going camping, and we'd load up the trailer and we'd go to Townsend, you know, that, and we'd always try to get one of those little spots on the lake, and we'd trout fish, and my brother and sister would too down the, you know, and we'd have a campfire and do all that stuff. And it was, and then of course we did it in tents before then, and, you know, on up, we got a little older, I guess we needed a little more creature comforts, but, How do you think the park's growth in tourism affected your business? Because it seems that just, you know, the most visited park in the country.
Yeah.
And I'd have to piggyback that.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, we certainly deserve about this much credit. And I'm holding about a half inch in between my fingers if somebody's just listening, but for the success of Old Smoky, we largely are successful because we had a good idea at the right time in a spot where, you know, we have 14 million visitors a year or so coming through, and Old Smoky is the most visited distillery in the world, by virtue of that, you know, that we certainly enjoy the benefit of the visitors to the park, and, you know, families in the region have lived off of the folks that are coming and visiting the park, and certainly that's been a big part of our business's success, is at least getting us off the ground. You know, we sell our products all over the world now, but I think without that springboard of Gatlinburg and the national park, I think it would have been tough to have gotten where we are.
As I remember when it came through the legislature, in the argument, I'm not a drinker. We don't drink. And I remember Tom Hensley, the Golden Goose,
right?
The liquor lobbyist, he since passed away. He was a dear friend of mine. I never voted with him, except when it came to taxes. I never voted for any more taxes on anything. But when they passed it, they said, you know, really, Burchett, all you're doing is a product that's already being produced, which we knew it was.
Sure.
And it's also all we're doing now is collecting some revenue off of it is basically what they were doing. I mean, the difference between moonshine and you know, and one of the other name brands,
sure,
are doing advertising for them here, but is yeah, they collect tax on them. And yeah, and so this is sort of a way to bring that in. And
yeah. Well, I will say, I think that, you know, we were the beneficiary of some good legislation in that effort, you know, at a time where we try to get the government out of our business and any deregulation. And certainly in that case, for us, it was good. And we've, you know, just at Old Smoky, we've probably got, you know, we're pushing up towards 1,000 employees. And you think about the number of jobs that are created out of that legislation, the revenue, like you say, on all levels, the local, the state, federal. I mean, it's unbelievable what happened. And that was, you know, certainly a forward thinking legislature. 2009, we're still reeling from the effects of a tough economic crisis with the housing industries. And I just, so I think that, you know, we're, I'm glad that, I'm glad the votes were there to carry that for sure.
Good deal. What do you think's next for Old Smoky Moonshine, or just the Old Smoky label, I guess?
Yeah, we continue to grow. We bought a tequila brand last year in the spirit space. We're awfully busy. We've got some expansion that we're looking at for additional retail stores, and I think that anything we can do to responsibly grow the brand in a way that grows opportunity for the folks that are already working in the business and create more jobs. It's what we do. Jesse and I've gotten into everything from, it's funny. I practiced law for about 10 years before starting that business. And I love being a lawyer, but, we've got our hands in a lot of different things now and have a lot of fun, in business, particularly create an opportunity for other folks and creating fun things for people to do and see up in Gatlinburg. We're celebrating a little bit of snow up there this morning. It was good to get up there at the ski lodge. So
I saw some of that. I used to ski it over Gatlinburg. I was the only guy that didn't drink in my fraternity. So once or twice a year we'd load up and I'd load up whoever had the biggest vehicle. And I had these old, K2 skis with the Solomon bindings, the old ankle breakers. I bought them at a garage sale for $5, I remember, and they were falling apart, but they were mine, and I didn't have to get, and they didn't say rental on them, so that's cool,
you know? Right? Yeah, that's funny.
I ended up, I think I sold them for $10 years later. So I came out all right, and I didn't break my ankles or so. I turned out, being a capitalist as I am, that was a pretty cool deal.
I feel,
you know, and I guess I should disclose this, that I actually was an early distiller in my youth. Actually, I had read up on this. I was always fascinated with it, and unbeknownst to my father, I mean, we'd make gunpowder. Dad was an old combat engineer in the Marine Corps in the Pacific Second World War, so blowing stuff up was nothing new to him, but he's always afraid I was going to blow my hand off. With my God's grace, my gunpowder mixture that we were making was never enough. It was charcoal, saltpeter, and sulfur, and I'd always go up to Henderson Floyd Drugs and buy the sulfur, And they quit selling it. They didn't want to sell it to us kids because they knew we were making gunpowder.
Right.
And she
right.
said, "Are you making gunpowder with this?" And I said, "No, ma'am. I've got a sick cow," because it said on the back something to do with cattle. You can feed it to cattle. And she goes, "Oh, okay." You know. But anyway, back to the moonshine. I had the copper tubing that was spun, and it was very keyed up, but it still worked. But I never did get my heat right. And it would always foam up on me. But by the grace of God, I didn't blow it up either. So that worked out pretty well.
One day we'll have to have you up at one of the distilleries and see if you can help us
I would love to see that. But by the grace of God, I didn't blow myself up with that crazy thing. But anyway, we'll probably edit that part out so I won't get the revenueers knocking on my door. But, you know, having a
statute's probably run by now.
Yeah, yeah, I hope so. I was a young teenager, but I just having a fire in West Hills in your backyard usually would draw attention to you. So I'm still not sure how I didn't get in trouble. But anyway, well, let me ask you about something else. So really, what I really wanted to talk about
Sure.
was this hurricane relief and just what y'all did for us up there. I say us, it's our people and Americans, dadgummit, are hurt. They're still hurting. That's a thing we got to remember, is that they're still hurting and they will be for months to come. You work for Mountain Ways. That's y'all's charity. And I like it because I see a lot of these others, and I'm going to tear into them next year. I really am, because they're heavy and administrative, and they've been in trouble in the past, and we let them back in, and then they pull some of this same old garbage, and then they collect money under the guise of, of what they're going to do for the people, and then that money never gets there. Like I remember under 9/11, so many groups raising money and funds and blood, what have you, and then turned out not a dime got to any of that. Anyway, Thanksgiving's coming up, and of course, and y'all just did incredible work for those people, and it's given people hope. But Joe, a lot of my listeners and viewers who are out of state have told us a little bit about Mountain Ways and what y'all did. What you and Jesse did for those people. And what made you get into this thing head on? Because you jumped in with both feet.
I first of all, I don't give us too much credit. We were there and helped, but there's a lot of folks that are carrying a lot more water than we are. But I think that the idea of Mountain Ways originated. Jesse and I were passionate about a project where we were helping kids in Sevier County and Cock County that didn't have an opportunity to do, summer programs and go see parts of the world that, as a kid, even I never really had an opportunity to do any of that. So we had started a nonprofit focused on that, and it was that simple. And that evolved into a larger effort, as you said earlier, with the impact of the fires and just, when we see people hurting, we want to help. And we've talked about the 14 million visitors that come to the Smokies. As we're working through these ideas in our minds, we were talking about trying to show love to these people that come and spend their money in Gatlinburg and just trying to give back in a way that folks gave to us during the fires. And so in late September, when this happened, we were faced with more of an opportunity to just dive in. I think that sometimes you don't think about what you well what should I do or can I do? It's more what, what are we gonna do? And we saw a quick opportunity to help people, and I didn't know where it would go, and I certainly didn't expect I didn't expect Dolly to jump in and really give us a big boost to begin like we did. But it turned into an effort much larger than us that has allowed us to raise a lot of money and make sure that folks are getting every dime of it. Our commitment, Jesse and I made the commitment that there would be no administrative expenses related to the relief effort for the floods and the damage from the hurricane. And it's interesting. We're learning a lot. We're learning a lot even about regulations. Little things that, I even, as a lawyer, you people assume everything right about the law, and it's
Oh, I
interesting.
don't, but go ahead. Some people
Well,
do.
but yeah, but I mean, you
I'm just
might, you
kidding you.
might.
I'm kidding you,
I
bro.
think that I understand that, but the idea of even required audits for when you start raising money and at the state level, if you raise X number of dollars and this and that, and I've been really we've been fortunate that we've navigated this, but there are a lot of expenses that are involved in just keeping up with government regulation as it pertains to nonprofits, and then you go into the needs to to review applications and just the human capital, you know, the need for people. And so there's, it is, I think there are a lot of costs that are involved in a lot of these nonprofits. I think it gets out of hand quickly. You know, I think that, it's not unlike, the government in some ways, where it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and this bureaucratic thing turns into all of a sudden you've got a giant that isn't very efficient and they don't operate like a business. And so if Mountain Ways was a business, it'd probably not be a great one, because we're fronting all the money and there's, but as far as like what we're doing and the good that's coming of it, it couldn't be better. And so we're excited about it.
What did you see on the ground up there when you visited those areas?
Yeah, I mean,
Tennessee and North Carolina.
Yeah, I think that we have gotten numbers that there's about 540 homes that were a total loss in Tennessee. And, we are struggling to get information still on from FEMA on numbers out of North Carolina.
Yeah.
And our best guess is that there may be twice as many homes lost in North Carolina. But it's, you know, it's been a, I remember the day that we were over in Newport with Dolly. I saw, you know, there were a lot of folks there that their lives were going on like normal, but I saw people that day with desperation in their eyes and in mud caked all over their clothes. And this was a couple of weeks after the big days of it. Well,
they got no power. They had no house. Some didn't have any identification. I tell them they're going to get $750, dadgummit. You know, some people were even turned down for that because, hell, they had no identification. They had no way to charge a cell phone. They had no computer. Yeah. And some bureaucrat wagging his finger at them, to me, is when you have these folks coming in illegally and getting over $1 billion. Well, that's another story. But let me ask you a little bit along those lines. I've been a critic of FEMA. Before this, what happened to those poor folks in Hawaii and what's still going on with those folks, and people have forgotten about it. And that's what I'm afraid they're going to forget about, our people up here in Tennessee and our people in North Carolina. And then, I've been critical of that, and up to then now, and this comes on, I'm still very critical. I don't think their funding always gets where it needs to go. And I don't believe some people are honest. We had the head of FEMA in our committee, and people were being turned down because they had a Trump sign in their front yard. That was not one isolated incident. That was in that one incident that was publicized. It was over 20 homes. And they said in the percentage of home or whatever, you know, that was such a small amount. But dadgum, if that was your family, you know, no way. I mean, it's like eminent domain. It's progress when it's somebody else's, but dadgum, when it's your piece of dirt, it's murder.
Yeah.
And I've talked about maybe structuring FEMA as more of a flow through to organizations like yours and Samaritan's Purse and some others, that if you qualify and you're on the ground and you're doing the job and you have a history of helping folks, it's similar to some friends of ours that do business with the federal government on cleanups and things like that.
Sure.
And right. And so I'm wondering if you think that could be a possibility with the
I mean, I think so. I mean, it's a novel thought. I think there's so many opportunities for abuse of discretion. But I think if you've got a good track record of success and you've got a good a good comfort level with the folks that are administering funds, sure. Right now, what I see is the one of the biggest challenges is we were in Cock County last week distributing checks, we're really a brand new organization in a lot of ways, but we were distributing $5,000 checks to families that qualified, and we've done it quickly. We're not messing around. We're raising the funds, and then we're identifying the need and confirming that the need is real in each instance best we can. But what I see as a challenge We have folks that are hearing mixed messages from the government that if they take this bit of money from us or from another nonprofit, they may not qualify for other funds. And you know, there's either a lot of confusion, or there is bad policy, or there is, you know, lack of communication. I don't know, you know, I don't know exactly where you lay blame at the end of the day, but there's no doubt it can be better. And
right.
whether that's flowing funds through a private foundation or a public foundation that is administering funds, you know, I think that, you know, much like education, I believe the folks in our local governments know best what they need and ought to do. And I think that folks like us that are working in the local area to take care of our own people, I think that we're probably better positioned than some bureaucrats
that's what we're saying with education, you know. They
well, but and I don't mean to you know, politicize that issue, but I think there's no doubt that you know, local control of things is better, and you know, we know East Tennessee a lot better than somebody from off somewhere. So I think I think there's merit there, you know, and if there were a structure whereby any government agency could work with us to actually be more effective, I would love that. I'd welcome it.
Up until a few weeks ago, a mutual friend of ours, Jeremy Faison, told me that there was areas in North Carolina that they were getting aid into that FEMA had not even visited yet. You know, their church was stepping up like they do, and like y'all have done. So I've become very much aware of that. I'm hoping to be on that DOGE committee or whatever. If not, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who chairs it, and I are very close, and we're going to, she's assured me she will help me with this stuff.
I just think, and I appreciate your common sense approach to this. You know, it is at the end of the day, you know, we've got to find a way to serve people better. And it's, you know, I'm not pointing fingers at anybody except to say that there's no doubt things could be done better. If we as an organization were able to participate in something like that, I could see value. You know, it's certainly I would love nothing more than to see more money get to these folks that need it a whole lot more quickly than it has, for sure.
What was your biggest, and we're going to run out of time, but what was your biggest logistical challenges you guys faced after Helene?
As a business or as an organization? I'm sorry.
Organization.
As an organization, you know, it's right now we're having trouble getting information about losses and trying to process information that really should be should be readily available, I would think, from the government agencies that are charged with gathering this. And you know, I was sitting in a meeting in Nashville earlier this week where we were looking at new technologies that identify disaster zones and the damage that had occurred, and you're taking satellite imagery from day minus one, you know, before the storm, and then day one after the storm or whatever, and being able to look quickly and identify structures that were lost. We're having trouble with, you know, addresses. We might get an address that puts a loss in the middle of a highway somewhere that doesn't identify a home, and we as a nonprofit that just want, all we want to do is write a check to somebody, and we're having a tough time confirming the loss, and that's frustrating, because it ought to be a whole lot easier.
That confirms a lot of my thoughts and fears about FEMA and some of these other organizations. Transparency is a big one. Well, we'll end that part of the question answer. I appreciate you coming on. We have a mutual friend, Eleanor Yoakum.
Of course.
Is just a dear friend of me and my girls. And she always, and before I even met you, she said, "You need to meet this guy." And I said, "All right." Oh.
Well, they're good folks. I was texting with Rob yesterday and have a lot of respect for them, and they've been good friends, and we've done a lot of business with the bank.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, they've been great. They've been great to work with. They're great community folks. Now, it's a part of the show that I dislike the most, but our guests seem to like the most, is where you get to ask me any question that you have of me. And of course,
Really?
I have the power of editing this. So if you say something I don't like, I'll just cut this whole part of the program out.
Goodness gracious. All right. Well, Golly bum, I guess, I am, I'll ask you this. My kids give me a hard time about, I think I'm a trendsetter and sometimes, and I love Carhartt beanies.
Yeah.
And so, my question for you would be, when did you adopt the Carhartt style? Because that is now, it's Carhartt
Yeah.
is so in vogue that things that I used to be able to buy for $9.99 at Ace Hardware are now, costing
Yep.
me almost $29.99.
Well, as our buddy Eleanor would say, she buys a lot of her stuff at Hammers, which I find humorous, knowing her status. But I guess the first time I bought a ham was I guess over 30 years ago.
So
There's a picture of me at Litton's at a Christmas party, and I'm standing there, and some of the people in that picture are no longer with us. So I was wearing one over 30 years ago. I was on an elevator after I first got elected to Congress, and Maxine Waters, of all people, she's kind of a buddy of mine. It drives everybody crazy on both sides of the aisle, but I don't care about white people's politics. You fight on the floor, and then you talk about your family and everything else when you walk off the floor. And that's the way I tried to be, and it saved me a lot of insanity, I guess. And she said, "Are you that boy that always wears that barn jacket?" I said, "Yes, ma'am, chair lady, I am." She said, "Why do you wear that?" And I said, "Well, three reasons." I said, "And they're just like me." I said, "It's American made, it holds up under pressure, and it's cheap." And she busted out laughing and said, "We're going to get along just fine." And we've been friends ever since then. But it was never a fashion thing for me. It was just a cheap jacket. I'm always working on my cars and motorcycles. And now I've got Kelly and Isabel and I have a little farm. My daughter's a barrel racer, and it's safe out there where we live. And I just like the jackets. I wish it's hard for me to find one made in America now.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Tennessee Talks. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Keep up with Congressman Burchett by following Rep. Tim Burchett on Twitter and Instagram, and Congressman Tim Burchett on Facebook and YouTube.